the patient's right to download their data into an app of their choosing, whether or not the health system knows anything about that app.
From InterSystems, it's the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. To learn more about this and other episodes, please visit podcast.healthydata.com.
We're here today with J.D. Whitlock, the CIO of Dayton Children's Hospital and owner of Wits End Consulting. J.D., thank you for joining us today.
Morning, Jordan. Happy to be here.
For our listeners, Dayton Children's Hospital is a $600 million pediatric integrated delivery network and pediatric acute care children's teaching hospital located in Dayton, Ohio. The hospital has 181 pediatric beds. J.D., I'd like to kick off our conversation by asking you about information blocking regulations. I know you've worked with these to some extent. You've written that it should be permissible for providers to put a few cautionary speed bumps in the path of patients, handing over their entire medical record to app vendors, not all of whom will have their best interests at heart, end quote. I'd like to ask you to elaborate upon what a patient-friendly implementation of information blocking regulations would look like. What do you think about patient access to their own electronic health record?
Yeah, sure thing. So this is a really tricky issue where we need to balance patients' right to their own medical record. And really what we're talking about here is patients' right to get the data in their record easily and quickly into an app of their choosing, because HIPAA gave, since 1996, they've had the right to the record, in the sense you can go to the hospital or doctor's office and say, give me everything in my record, and you get a bunch of paper or a CD or a flash drive or something, right? And so really it's changing the format of the data and the speed at which you get the data, okay? What happened with all this regulatory language and execution of this just a couple years ago now, getting close to 2 years ago, is that some folks in the provider community said we need to be a little bit careful here, because we are all conditioned to add apps to our phone and very quickly accept all the little defaults that say yes, I accept all these things. And what you're doing is in this scenario, you can be giving your complete medical record to a company that has built an app that is actually not beholden to HIPAA, because due to the way that HIPAA works, if data is self-released by the patient, whoever is getting it does not have to do all the HIPAA rules. Now, the government is reconsidering some of those rules, but they're not changed yet. And so basically, some of us were of the opinion we don't want to limit patients' access to their own record. We do think that we should caution patients what they're about to do. And so what that looks like in Epic world that I can speak to, because we're Epic customers, I can't speak to the details of how this works with other EHRs. Epic does a nice job of saying, hey, you are about to release this information to this vendor that'll stay a live connection for this long. We just want to make sure that you understand what you're about to do when you click the button at the bottom. That's really all it is. When we say speed bumps, I think it's adding to the patient right, a patient right to understand what they're about to do by releasing this. Now, what's interesting about this is that since these regulations changed about 2 years ago, this may be different on pediatric side than the adult side. I know there's more. There's more venture capital going into more apps on the adult medicine side, but we have not seen a whole lot of people actually use that functionality. So there was a lot of attention paid to how the regs were changing, and then actually not a whole lot of activity there. So now that I'm talking about chapter one of what changed in April of 2021. Then there was what changed last fall for the all EHI, which is a whole different story, which would take longer to explain. I don't know if you want to get into that right now or not.
How often are HIPAA requests even made?
HIPAA requests are made all the time, but but very often in the, you know, to our HIM department is most all health systems have a HIM department with a release of information process. And then depending on the receiving, if somebody is going to some other health system or seeing some other specialist, it completely depends on their capability, right? If that other specialist is on Epic, then it's pretty seamless just within Epic. You don't necessarily have to go get all of that. If they're not, you may still have had to get all that on a flash drive or something.
So JD, you mentioned third-party apps and people just downloading them and clicking through the terms and conditions. I'd like to ask you to speak to what should a CIO of a healthcare delivery system be thinking about when considering integrating third-party apps into an Epic EHR instance within the umbrella topic of digital health innovation?
Sure. So most of the time, and this is where the patient right comes in, right? It's the patient's right to download their data into an app of their choosing, whether or not the health system knows anything about that app. So mostly that's what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. Now there's the added complexity in pediatric world of most of the time, of course, this is a parent or guardian with a proxy rights into the patient's medical record, which by the way, even complicates the situation more because if, for sake of argument, there was another, I'm going to use the term Cambridge Analytica, that company that got in trouble mm-hmm. a few years ago because their wildly inappropriate use of Facebook data, a Cambridge Analytica-like vendor out there that was taking patients' PHI and then maybe doing inappropriate things with it, did not ultimately have the patient's best interest at heart. Now there's the added complexity of mom or dad made the choice to share junior's medical record and you know, maybe 2 years later that a patient is an adult and somebody else shared their medical record. So the parent has to accept that risk for their kid. So it's very complex. And then you have different adolescent privacy rules and can be different in different states. Mm-hmm. So the age of an adolescent's right to kick mom and dad out of their medical record can be different mm-hmm. in different states. And so mm-hmm. it's very obviously just difficult for EHR vendors to handle all of that complexity. So it gets very complex very quickly.
So the quote that I read about the information blocking regulations cited a healthcare journalism, cited an article by Forbes. So I want to ask about healthcare journalism. In particular, I'd like to ask, there are other CIOs of healthcare systems listening to this episode right now. What could they do to improve the way that their story is told at their institution if they speak to journalists and to make sure that their story is told accurately? Is there anything that CIOs can do to help improve the state of healthcare journalism?
That's a good question. In relation to the Forbes article, the comments that I made were, the point of that article was, Epic is about to be disrupted because of venture capital going into all this digital health. And my point was, no, not really, because your average Epic customer spends most of their time doing things that aren't terribly easy to disrupt, like surgery and emergency room and hospitals. And a lot of times when you turn on the TV and see some new company that wants to treat some condition of yours with a video visit and then we'll send you a prescription, it mostly falls into primary care. Mm-hmm. And so that was me just pointing that out. Look, you're always going to have a minority of journalists that are just going for the sensationalistic headline and not digging deep. And so what can we as healthcare CIOs do? Well, I guess we can call out some of the worst examples of that when we see it. And by the way, I'm not saying that author, that Forbes article was in that category. Mm-hmm. I just think they missed a few subtleties there, and I pointed out a few of the subtleties.
Yeah. So I'd like to pivot this conversation, move to a new topic that I think may be of interest to our listeners and hasn't been broached on too many other podcasts in the health IT space. And that would be selecting a healthcare enterprise resource planning or ERP vendor. I know you work with Workday, and I know that most CIOs work with some ERP or other. I'd like to ask you to speak to our listeners about what went into that decision and how you leverage your ERP and what lessons you've learned through that process, those processes.
Sure. So choice of an ERP and then implementation and execution of an ERP is, probably not quite as important as the same for EHR, but almost as important, right? Mm. So we've been on Workday for a while. We were actually one of the first handful of health systems that went onto their supply chain management module back in 2019. So we're using Workday for almost everything that you can use Workday for. As I understand the market right now, looking at some of the class research data and other sources, it's sort of coming down to either Workday or Oracle. And of course, the advantage of on the Oracle side, if a health system is a Cerner, now Oracle Health customer for their EHR, they could go with Oracle ERP and have the proverbial one throat to choke for their EHR and their ERP. Right. And of course, there's some integration points there, too. So one interesting thing that I've noted talking to other CIOs is that in some health systems, they're stuck in neutral on ERP transition because they're having difficulty convincing the leadership of all those different business units, HR, finance, supply chain, that they even need a modern cloud-based integrated ERP, because it's obviously a massive amount of massive change management, big costs, new costs, implementation costs, certainly. And some people are happy with their legacy solutions, and sometimes the benefits are maybe longer term and a little bit harder to communicate. And so that's an interesting dynamic that I've seen. And I've also seen a lot of health systems that are in the middle of that transition. That's just something else that's a vitally important part of a health system CIO's job these days.
So how would you advise a CIO listening to this episode to speak to those individual business unit owners to make their case that it is important to go to a modern cloud-based ERP despite the associated costs and change management issues?
Sure. I think this is definitely a case of shining a light on some of the technical debt out there, which of course you got to be careful with that term, because the leaders not in IT might not even really understand what we mean when we say technical debt. Mm-hmm. It's all the effort that the hamster wheel, going on in the background to move data between the systems, to sort of fight with some of the legacy architectures to keep up the upgrading. Often these are still on-prem systems. At Dayton Children's, we're a relatively small health system, and I've noticed this same thing for other small health systems where you can actually have your major facilities connected with dedicated fiber, not traversing the internet. And that is, we're keeping our EHR and other core clinical systems on-prem. Hmm. Okay, now if you're a 50 hospital system, by definition, it really doesn't matter where EHR is hosted. It might as well be hosted in the cloud, because you have to traverse the internet to get to those 50 hospitals, right? Or maybe 49 hospitals if your data centers, if your data centers at your largest flagship hospital. But a lot of smaller health systems are staying on-prem for the clinical. Mm-hmm. However, for your ERP, the benefits of going cloud are just, it's the normal benefits of going cloud, that you don't have to worry about hosting that on-prem. One thing I'll say complimentary for Workday is they do, it's one code base, and every 6 months you get an upgrade, and that upgrade is relatively seamless. And they're always rolling out a bunch of new features. The interfacing and the APIs are done well. Those are the things you get out of a modern, built from the ground up software as a service ERP.
So to what extent are the, I'd like to ask about healthcare delivery systems' motivations to move to the cloud. I'd like to ask you to balance to what extent the motivations are security, automatic upgrades, not worrying about that infrastructure, purchasing hardware, replacing hardware, versus liability. Hey, if something goes wrong, if there is ransomware, if there is some kind of hack or attack, yep, that, the lawsuits and the legal onus is actually on a third party, whatever that cloud vendor is, as opposed to us.
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question. So there's a whole lot to unpack there. So one thing I think we're mostly past, I think in the early days, I don't know, 10 years ago, whatever, some of these, the cloud capabilities became available, and we would say, well, we can't put our protected health information in the cloud. The cloud can't handle it, right? We're past that. Look, I mean, the major cloud platforms, they're HITRUST certified, and come on, let's be honest. Based on our, cybersecurity capabilities of your average health system, that we're getting ransomwared. Somebody's getting ransomwared every day, right? In the news, we're not necessarily doing any better there. So that's one thing. Now, in terms of the liability you brought up, which is a very good point. Ultimately, some of these bigger cloud vendors are also bigger targets, right? So on the one hand, you may not have the same sophistication in your cybersecurity defenses at a smaller health system. On the other hand, you're not as big a big of a target. So, interestingly, when you consider the SolarWinds hack a few years ago, mm-hmm. And for those that are not familiar with that, what happened was that is some software that was used to help with IT architectures for many, 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 many companies. I think I may be getting this number wrong, but the number I'm remembering is 18,000 companies used SolarWinds and were compromised by the fact that it was an inside job, basically. And there was malware that was part of an update to the software. Okay, so lots of people were compromised. Basically, anybody that used the software was compromised. Dayton Jones was compromised. It's not releasing any state secrets to say that. However, the bad guys only had enough time to exploit that in a smaller number of and higher visibility, higher value targets. They typically went off after government agencies. And so basically the joke when we talked about this with our leadership and our board was, well, the bad news is we were one of 18,000 companies that were compromised. The good news is we weren't important enough for them to exploit it, right? Which is a weird situation you really don't want to be in, right? That's a weird thing to explain to your board, right? So you got to be careful about all of this. I don't know if I have a really good direct answer to your liability question. Mm-hmm. Another complicating factor closely related to that is of course cyber security insurance. And how that's changed so much, and because of all the ransomware and the price in the insurance is going up so quickly, and the questions that you would get asked from your cybersecurity vendor are getting harder and harder and harder. Mm-hmm. Some people are having to reconsider whether they even can get that insurance. And then you have to ask yourself, are the dollars better spent on the insurance? Are the dollars better spent on that next thing we ought to do to implement, you know, zero trust architecture at our health system? So it gets very complex. There's no easy answer. It's absolutely what's the best solution given the particulars of your health system.
Well, JD, we've covered a lot of ground today. We've talked about cybersecurity, ERPs, EHRs going into the cloud. We've spoken to some extent about integrating third-party applications, security of releasing patient data, even journalism we touched upon. Do you have any last closing words for any of our listeners today?
I can't think of anything else. Thanks, Jordan.
All right. Well, for our listeners, this has been JD Whitlock, the CIO of Dayton Children's Hospital and owner of Wits End Consulting. JD, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Jordan.
From InterSystems, this has been the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. Thank you for listening.